नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 10, Text Number 4. Chapter entitled Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions.
Sthitir Vaikuntha Vijaya, Poshanam Tad Anugraha, Manvantarani Sadharma, Utaya Karma Vasanaha.
Sthiti, the right situation. Vaikuntha Vijaya, victory of the Lord of Vaikuntha. Poshanam, maintenance. Tad Anugraha, His causeless mercy. Manvantarani, the reign of the Manus. Sad Dharma, perfect occupational duty. Utayaha, impetus to work. Karma Vasanaha,
desire for fruitive work.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Translation: the right situation for the living entities is to obey the laws of the Lord and thus be in perfect peace of mind under the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Manus and their laws are meant to give right direction in life. The impetus for activity is the desire for fruitive work. Purport. It's a long purport, over one and a half page. This material world is created, maintained for some time, and again annihilated by the will of the Lord. The ingredients for creation and the subordinate creator Brahma are first created by Lord Vishnu in his first and second incarnations. The first Purusha incarnation is Mahavishnu, and the second Purusha incarnation is the Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, from whom Brahma is created. The third Purusha avatar is the Shirodakshaya Vishnu, who lives as the supersoul of everything in the universe and maintains the creation generated by Brahma. Shiva is one of the many sons of Brahma, and he annihilates the creation. Therefore, the original creator of the universe is Vishnu, and he is also the maintainer of the created beings by his causeless mercy. As such, it is the duty of all conditioned souls to acknowledge the victory of the Lord and thus become pure devotees and live peacefully in this world, where miseries and dangers are always in existence. The conditioned souls who take this material creation as the place for satisfaction of the senses and thus are illusioned by the external energy of Vishnu remain again to be subjected by the laws of material nature, creation and destruction. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that beginning from the topmost planet of this universe down to the lowest planet, Patal Loka, all are destructible, and the conditioned souls may travel in space either by good or bad work or by modern spacecraft. But they are sure to die everywhere, although the duration of life in different planets is different. The only means to attain eternal life is to go back home, back to Godhead, where there is no more rebirth as in the material planets. The conditioned souls, being unaware of this very simple fact, because of forgetting their relationship with the Lord of Vaikuntha, try to plan out a permanent life in this material world. Being illusioned by the external energy, they thus become engaged in various types of economic and religious development, forgetting that they are meant for going back home, back to Godhead. This forgetfulness is so strong due to the influence of Maya that the conditioned souls do not at all want to go back to Godhead. By sense enjoyment, they become victims of birth and death repeatedly and thus spoil human lives, which are chances for going back to Vishnu. The directive scriptures made by the Manus in different ages and millenniums are called Sad-Dharma, good guidance for the human beings, who should take advantage of all the revealed scriptures for their own interest to make life's successful termination. The creation is not false, but it is a temporary manifestation just to give a chance for the conditioned souls to go back to Godhead. The desire to go back to Godhead and functions performed in that direction form the right path of work. When such a regulative path is accepted, the Lord gives all protection to His devotees by His causeless mercy. While the non-devotees risk their own activities to bind themselves in a chain of fruitive reactions. The word sadharma is significant in this connection. Sadharma, or duty performed for going back to Godhead and thus becoming His unalloyed devotee, is the only pious activity. All others may pretend to be pious, but actually they are not. It is for this reason only that the Lord advises in the Bhagavad Gita that one give up all so-called religious activities and completely engage in the devotional service of the Lord to become free from all anxieties due to the dangerous life of material existence. To work situated in sadharma is the right direction of life. Thank you. One's aim of life should be to go back home, back to Godhead, and not be subjected to repeated births and deaths in the material world by getting good or bad bodies for temporary existence. Herein lies the intelligence of human life, and one should desire the activities of life in that way. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmalitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So this chapter is entitled Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. So in the first verse of this chapter, the 10 subjects of the Bhagavatam were mentioned. And in the last couple of verses, or last verse, we heard about the first two subject matters of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which are Sarga and Visarga. So here in this verse, Poshanam, or maintenance, or protection, is being described. And also, And one of the subject matters is Manvantareshanu Katha, the change of Manus. So that is also very briefly being summarized here. So in these set of verses, the subject matters of the Bhagavatam are being described here, in brief. So Prabhupada begins his purport by explaining that the Supreme Lord is the protector and maintainer of all living entities. So Prabhupada explains that this material world is created, maintained by the Supreme Lord. So we see that the material world is a place for all the rebellious living entities who want to enjoy independently of Krishna. So this material world is facilitated by the Purusha avatars. So Garbhodakshay Vishnu, through Garbhodakshay Vishnu, through his pose, all these universes come out. And through him, all these material elements come out. So he glances upon material nature and he impregnates the living entities. And then all these universes come about and the living entities are there. And then he enters within all the universes as Garbhodakshay Vishnu. And from Garbhodakshay Vishnu, Lord Brahma is born. So Mahavishnu is responsible for all the primary elements of creation. And he also activates them. And then through Garbhodakshay Vishnu, Brahma takes birth. And the role of Brahma, he's the secondary creator. So whereas Vishnu is the primary creator. So he creates all the ingredients. Everything is there. Brahma comes and what Brahma does, he creates the bodies of all living entities. So Brahma creates the moving and the non-moving living entities. But we see even Lord Brahma, he's not independent in his creation. He meditates on the Supreme Lord and he derives inspiration from the Supreme Lord and he learns how to create from the Supreme Lord. And even the bodies which Lord Brahma creates, they have to be activated by the super soul. So the super soul as Shirodakshaya Vishnu enters the hearts of all living entities and he activates the bodies of all living entities. So without the presence of the super soul, our bodies cannot be activated. They won't be activated. So it is by his presence they activated. So in this way we can see that the Supreme Lord is the creator of the universe. And he is also the maintainer. So we know there's the Brahma, Vishnu and Mahesh. So Lord Vishnu is the maintainer of the universe. So here, as Prabhupada says, the super soul who lives, Shirodakshaya Vishnu, who lives as the super soul of everything in the universe and maintains the creation generated by Brahma. So Lord Vishnu, he maintains all living entities. So the Supreme Lord has provided everything for our maintenance. It is there in nature. The air we breathe, the sun is there. And he says, what's that verse? Nityo nityanam chetnas chetnanam eko bahunam yo vidadhati kaman. That the Supreme Lord, he is the maintainer of all living entities. He provides everything for all living entities. So all living entities are meant to take their quota and engage it in the service of the Lord. And in that way, Krishna, he maintains all living entities. So, and Prabhupada says, as such, it is the duty of all conditioned souls to acknowledge the victory of the Lord. And here in Sanskrit, it is said that Vaikuntha Vijaya, the victory of the Lord. So, the duty of the jiva, the living entity, is to recognize the protection of the Lord and the maintenance of the Lord. So, the protection of the Lord is special. So, which even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva cannot offer. So when we surrender unto Krishna, Krishna protects us from the sinful reactions. So that is the protection of the Lord, which even Brahma and Shiva cannot offer. We see there's this pastime of Lord Shiva in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 10th canto. So there's this demon, Rikasura, who was performing severe austerities. And he wanted to have a benediction from Lord Shiva, that whoever he touches with his hand, whoever, and that person will get destroyed. So Vrikasura performed severe tapasya, and he was offering his own flesh in the fire. So he wanted Lord Shiva to be present, and he wanted to ask a benediction. So he knew Lord Shiva can be very easily pleased and he can be very easily angered. So he was performing the sacrifice and then he was, one by one, he was offering the flesh from his, cutting the flesh from his body and throwing it in the sacrificial fire. And then he was about to throw himself and then Lord Shiva appeared and he stopped him. And he said, tell me, what do you want? And he said, I want a benediction by which whoever's head I touch with my hand, they'll be destroyed. So, you know, Lord Shiva said, okay, so be it. And then he wanted to test that benediction on Lord Shiva. And then Lord Shiva, he fled in fear. And he fled all over the universe. And Vrikasura, he was chasing the Lord. So we can see that ultimately the protection is provided by the Supreme Lord. No one else can protect themselves. And specifically what Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he mentions on his commentary on this verse, is the, in this verse, Poshanam is translated as maintenance, but in the first verse, it is translated as protection. It's interesting. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur mentions that the protection actually refers to that the Supreme Lord protects the living entities from their sinful reactions. And that is one of the qualities of the Supreme Lord. He can give protection from sinful reactions. Because we all are suffering because of sinful reactions, because of sinful activities and the reactions we get from them. As Prabhupada further on, he describes in his purport that we can live very peacefully in this world if we acknowledge the position of the Supreme Lord, which is also mentioned in the verse here. The right situation for the living entities is to obey the laws of the Lord and thus be in perfect peace of mind under the protection of the Supreme Lord. So Krishna, he gives the peace formula in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhoktaram Yagyata Pasam, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, Suridam Sarva Bhutanam, Gyatva Maam Shantim Richati. So Krishna says the peace formula is very simple. Bhoktaram Yagya Tapasam. I am the enjoyer of everything. Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. I am the proprietor of everything. And I am the friend of all living entities. I am the proprietor of all the planets, all the demigods. And I'm the friend of all living entities. So if someone who understands this in truth, they will be peaceful. Because they can understand that they are under the protection of the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, if someone is thinking, I possess everything, I'm, you know, everyone's friend, and I'm the enjoyer of everything, then they cannot be peaceful. They have to take responsibility for their activities. And Krishna says that Karmani eva dikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana ma karma phal hetubur ma tes, what's the last, ma tes tav sango karmani. And Krishna says you have a right to perform your prescribed duties, but you're not entitled to the fruits of the action. So in India, everyone knows this verse. Generally, they know the first line. They only know the first line. Okay, it's because of the Mahabharata. I remember I used to watch the Mahabharata when I was a kid. It used to be broadcast on national television. It's not broadcast anymore, I think. Is it still broadcast? Still. Okay, there's a new version. So it's still broadcast. So in that, then, in the Mahabharata, then this Bhagavad Gita comes, you know, the battle of Kurukshetra. So there, then, you know, they say this. So everyone knows the first line, but they don't know the rest of the verse. So everyone says, you know, just do your duty. Just do your duty, Prabhu. But they don't know the rest, which Krishna says, perform your prescribed duties. You have a right to perform your prescribed duties, but you're not entitled to the fruits of action. And never consider yourself to be the cause of activities, and never be attached to not doing your duty. So they don't know all of that. So this attachment to the fruits of activity is the cause of suffering. And in other words, it is the mode of passion. So the characteristic of the mode of passion is attachment to the fruits of activity. So mode of goodness is basically performing one's duty according to scripture and not being attached to the fruits. That's the mode of goodness. And mode of passion is being attached to the fruits of activity. Or what will I get from this? You know, everyone says, what's in it for me? And here, as it says, the impetus for activity is the desire for fruitive work. So we can see that today's society is more or less based on the mode of passion and ignorance. So the modes of nature are always changing. One is the competing for dominance. And you cannot stay in one mode forever. So when people are in passion, either they have to go in goodness or in ignorance. So, but generally, everyone goes in ignorance. So if the mode of goodness is not cultivated, then things degrade further and further. And as we can see, today's material civilization, the standards of sense gratification are degrading day by day, which is also predicted in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 12th canto, that all the qualities of a human being, they will degrade by the passing of every day. Mercy, truthfulness, compassion, all strength. So many of these things are degrading. So, mode of passion means the attachment for the fruits of one's work. What's in it for me? And that Srila Prabhupada mentions in the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, in his purport, that the mode of passion is characterized by the attraction between man and woman. And this is also further explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 11th canto. Maharaj Nimi, he inquires from the Nava Yogendras. He inquires in the 3rd chapter, he asks them a question: can you please describe to me the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord and how one can cross beyond it? So there, I think it's Antariksha and Prabuddha, they explain about the illusory energy in much more detail. So I'll read you some verses from there. Just please bear with me. So here, which this verse again further explains the verse we are discussing, where Antariksha says, impelled by deep-rooted material desires, the embodied living entity engages his active sense organs in fruitive activities. He then experiences the results of his material actions by wandering throughout this world in so-called happiness and distress. Thus, the conditioned living entity is forced to experience repeated birth and death. Impelled by the reactions of his own activities, he helplessly wanders from one auspicious situation to another, suffering from the moment of creation until the time of cosmic annihilation. So from the beginning of Deva Brahma till the end of Deva Brahma, because of this attachment to fruitive activity, we have to suffer all this time. And then further on, it is explained where the sage Prabuddha, he speaks. He says, Sri Prabhupada said, accepting the roles of male and female in human society, the conditioned souls unite in sexual relationships. Thus, they constantly make material endeavors to eliminate their unhappiness and unlimitedly increase their pleasure. But one should see that they inevitably achieve exactly the opposite result. In other words, their happiness inevitably vanishes, and as they grow older, their material discomfort increases. Wealth is a perpetual source of distress. It is most difficult to acquire, and it is virtual death for the soul. What satisfaction does one actually gain from his wealth? Similarly, how can one gain ultimate or permanent happiness from one's so-called home, children, relatives, and domestic animals, which are all maintained by one's hard-earned money? So this is the mode of passion, so which is attachment to the fruits of results. And we see today's society is organized in such a way that we are trained to be fruitive, right from our upbringing is like that. So we see we are taught if you want to make money, you have to get a job, and then you earn the fruits, and that those fruits belong to you. And that is even ingrained in the law now. They've made laws. So there's the concept of ownership, private ownership. So where they are saying, this belongs to you, and this is yours. So in this way, they've made so many kinds of laws through which this concept of fruitive activity is solidified. But Vedic civilizations were different. They were not like that. And we can see in today's society, as Prabhupada mentions here, the conditioned souls who take this material creation as the place for satisfaction of the senses and thus are illusioned by the external energy of Vishnu remain again to be subjected to the laws of material nature, creation and destruction. So conditioned souls have taken this material world as the place of sense gratification. So everyone thinks how I can enjoy the most in this material world, how I can exploit the resources of nature to enjoy the most in a personal way and in a collective way. But the result of all this enjoyment is repeated birth and death. So if, as Krishna explains, if you think you are the enjoyer, then you are the cause of that activity. And therefore you have to either enjoy or suffer the results of that activity. So that is the problem of seeking the fruits of activities. The result of that is repeated birth and death. And that is suffering. So, and even Krishna says in the Gita that if one lives in the mode of passion, the result is greed, and the result is also, it leads to misery. So not only does one suffer in this world through mode of passion, but one suffers again and again because one has to take so many bodies to experience the results of that activity. That is the problem. So we can see today's society is all about, it's very, very fruitive. If people lose the motivation to work, if there's no money involved, how many people will go to work if there's no money? Because it's very fruitive. Or if there's not enough money also. So people complain, why there's not enough money? So there is attachment to the fruits of activity. And then what do they do with those fruits? They don't use it in the service of God. But those fruits are used for their own enjoyment. And in this way, people entangle themselves more and more in the web of karma. But a devotee understands that everything belongs to the Supreme Lord. Isha Vasyam Idam Sarvam. That the Supreme Lord is the owner and controller of everything in this universe, both moving and non-moving. And therefore, everything should be used in the service of the Lord. So societies which are based on the mode of goodness, they don't work on this principle. So societies which are based on the mode of goodness, they are like egalitarian societies in which people, they do things for each other, but they don't expect some result from that activity. But in Krishna consciousness, we take it a step further. We perform activities for the pleasure of Krishna. We perform different activities, just like in this temple. Someone is cooking right now. Someone is cooking breakfast for us. They're not getting anything out of it. So all of us will enjoy that prasadam. And then someone is doing worshipping the deity. And someone dressed the deity in the morning. The deities in the morning. So we get to have very, wonderful darshan. And in this way, different devotees are doing so many different services. And they're giving the fruits of that activity to Krishna. They're doing it for the pleasure of Krishna. But everyone else also benefits from that. Whereas societies which are based on mode of passion is, people just go to work to get, not to give. I was hearing one lecture by Devamrit Maharaj on spiritual economics. He was saying, so go to work to give, not to get. He's saying people go to work to get. So they can, with what they get, then they enjoy, spend it on themselves. So as devotees also, we have to be very careful. If we're getting a source of income, we can easily identify with that and say, this is mine. Or, this is the problem with today's society. We said, this is my money. It's because it's in my bank account. And this is my house because I've got a paper which says this is my house. And this is my company because this is a private limited. So it's in law. And the system is like that. So when we are part of the system, we can also very easily, in a subtle way, begin to think like that. Though we are devotees also. So, but if we remain very Krishna conscious, we hear the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita and associate with devotees, then we can always, we can be in that consciousness. And Prabhupada's mission was to establish Varnashram or rural communities in which devotees live together cooperatively and in which all the four Varnas are there. But everyone is acting for the satisfaction of Krishna and everyone else also benefits. Everyone is engaged according to one's capacity, according to one's proclivity. And such communities are self-sustaining. So this is a wonderful way to live. Because otherwise, so much of our human energy goes to so many mundane causes. Though the results of that activity can be used in Krishna's service, but it is better if we engage all our energy in the service of the Lord. And as Prabhupada says, cities are meant for preaching. Cities are actually very hellish places. There's nothing glorious about living in Melbourne or Auckland or New York. Cities are hellish places. We are living in small apartments, you know, high-rise buildings. Everything is expensive. The food we have to buy from a supermarket, everything is contaminated. So, and so much of our energy goes 8-9 hours in working and then commuting. So Prabhupada said, cities are for preaching and rural communities are for living. And that kind of lifestyle in itself is good, big preaching. You don't have to give any lecture. But just if you live that lifestyle, that itself is preaching. And we can see ISKCON communities in the world who are attempting to do that, like in New Vrajadham in Hungary and now Chaupati Vara. They are attracting so much attention. And people want to see, you know, what are you doing so different? And how you're living so nicely. And you're self-sustained. So this is Prabhupada's vision. So we have to, the process of Krishna consciousness is to get rid of material desires. So as Anya Bilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma, what is it? Anya Bilashita Shunyam? Anagrita. One person. Gaurav. Anavritam, yeah. Jnana Karma Anavritam. So, the definition of pure devotional service is to be free from material desires, free from desires of fruitive activity, karma, and jnana, and engage in the service of the Supreme Lord favorably. That's the definition of bhakti. So, we see that Krishna consciousness is about becoming free from material desires, it's about becoming free from the mode of passion. So, even in devotional service, we can see that this mode of passion is very strong. We have to get rid of it. So sometimes when someone asks us to do service, we think there's some calculation going on in the back of our heads. You know, very complicated algorithms and maths is going on. I've done this much service and I should do only this much, not a little bit more. The rest of the time is for me. Or I'll only give this much. Because I've benefited from such and such and such from this community. So we do all these complex calculations. But actually all our time, energy and resources are meant for Krishna's pleasure. And then in this verse it is said that the manus and their laws are meant to give the right direction in life. So this is also one of the subject matters of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the change of manus. So if you read the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a description of so many manus, Svayambhuva Manu, this Manu, that Manu, so many Manus are there. So the Manus are mainly their kings, and there's also the Manu Samhita, which gives guidance to living entities. And even Prabhupada says in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, this verse in which whatever a great man does, common men they follow. He says that the leaders of society, they should follow the standard revealed scriptures, including the Manu Samhita. So the Manu Samhita gives guidance to humanity and specifically to kings, or to how to govern. Because the king is the representative of the Supreme Lord. So he's the representative of the Supreme Lord. So he's meant to propagate Krishna consciousness. So he is meant to understand the purpose of the Supreme Lord. So the purpose of the Supreme Lord of coming to this material world is to reclaim the living entities who are suffering in this material world. So the king is also meant to fulfill that purpose. So we see in the Vedic times, the Kshatriyas, they would take guidance from the Brahmanas. So the Brahmana is compared to the head in a body, and the Kshatriyas are the arms. So they take guidance in how to rule and how to conduct the affairs of the government. Ultimately, for the liberation of the living entities, as Prabhupada says, the duty of a king is to free the living entities from lust. So do you have any questions or comments on this verse? There's a lot more which can be said. It's a big purport, and there's so many points there. So we only have 2 minutes, so we have to end at 8:30. Probably any questions or comments or corrections? In the 4th chapter, yes. Okay.
We have, in society, oftentimes, when things go wrong, there's different types of arbitration, mediation, things, and sometimes somebody might be involved in some violence and they have to do some anger management course or something like that. We never hear about a last management course in society. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Anger is there because of lust. So if they treat the root cause of anger, then they can take care of it. So, yes, because as it is, Krishna says, lust is situated in a body. It's residing. Krishna, he gives the strategic locations, explains the strategic locations where lust is residing, the mind, the senses, and the intelligence. That's where the lust resides in every living entity. So our intelligence is polluted by lust, and intelligence is the next door neighbor of the soul. So if we have a contaminated intelligence, if intelligence is not pure, then it will engage in activities for sense gratification, or fruitive activities, which is the cause of bondage. So it is the duty of leaders to come up with ways in which they can propagate spiritual knowledge to get rid of this lust. So it's not easy. It's quite a challenge to do that. So the way Prabhupada did it was distribution of literature. So when we distribute literature very profusely, and distribution of prasadam, and performance of Harinam Sankirtan, when these activities are performed very on a large scale, we can see a change in consciousness take place. It will take some time, but that shift in consciousness will be there by the performance of these activities. So we cannot, of course, it is very difficult to approach the head. So it is, one strategy is, okay, you approach the head and try to preach to the head. But that's, it's possible, but very difficult. So the other way is you influence the masses. And then if the masses are educated in Krishna consciousness, then they can choose the right person. Yes, Prabhuji. Does that, Prabhu, answer? Or would you like to add something to it?
Yesterday I was having lunch with Mahatma. I was a little late and he was reading Beyond Birth and Death, this small book of Prabhupada. Beyond Birth and Death. And I picked it up and I was reading this one sentence of that book, and I was thinking, just like what you said, it was Prabhupada's strategy to control lust and living in cities through literature, through instruction, through his books, and in a very accessible way that anybody could pick up that book and read it and understand. Particularly if they read it over and over again, they can understand that we're suffering because of attachment, because of trying to enjoy the separate from God. And the message is consistent. Consistently pounded in through these four books, and they're very powerful. They're just like they're powerful. They're small books, they're accessible books, but they're as powerful as the commentary of the Bhagavatam, the commentary of the chariots. Sometimes we take them for granted. It's on the way to Krishna. It's part of perfection. It's actually a very profound information.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, we need to end here. It's past 8:30. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki.